Okay, welcome back, everybody. This is the Creation Liberty Podcast, show number 47 for September 3rd, 2012. My name's Chris Johnson. I'm the founder of Creation Liberty Evangelism, where our purpose is to win the lost to Christ and to teach the truth of God's Word and science. And we believe God's Word is the authority over mankind. We believe in the young earth creation account the Bible teaches, and we believe that evolution, as it's taught in the public schools of America today, is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of mankind. And to learn more about that, you can check us out at www.creationliberty.com. Well, the topic of today's show is going to be very interesting because we're going to have an interesting guest by the name of Jera from Michigan. Jera, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I appreciate you being very cordial in the scheduling to work this out with me. And
it's a pleasure to be on your show, sir.
Well, I appreciate that. And would you go ahead and take 30 seconds, just tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
All right. My name is Jera Wolf. I am in my 30s, a father of two, and my current beliefs are I was once originally a minister of the Christian faith, and recently, about 6 or 7 years ago, I left it and started to pursue a profession in science. And while I don't declare myself an atheist, I propose that I'm an agnostic. I'm also a supporter of evolution, and I guess you would consider me a proponent for the evolutionary theory.
Okay. And so when you say agnostic, could you define what you mean by that so everybody understands is on the same page?
Yes, I believe that before you actually, one of the best ways to break the groups down is what I consider the most fundamental question is, do you believe in a higher power to begin with? While it's important for many people to ask whether, to define that when they say God, they're speaking about a certain set of definitions, like the Christian God, for example, Yahweh, Zion, who is the Father of Christ, and so forth. That's a very specific character. But before you can actually begin to share who and what God is, you really have to convince someone whether or not there's something there they don't see. Mm-hmm. And so, at that fundamental question, there seems to be a schism that some of us believe in a higher power and some of us are certain one doesn't exist. I kind of take issue with both of these positions because I feel they're somewhat illogical when militantly asserted.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well then, you said at one point that you used to be a Christian, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Did you want to talk about maybe share with everybody just a little bit about why you decided to walk away from the Christian faith, as it were?
Well, there were a variety of reasons. Although my upbringing was in a particularly fanatic area, I mean, they were very zealot, like, and they were very reactive, and they were somewhat abusive in their approach to imposing the faith on the young. And I chafed under this because I read the Bible and I would go at it with my very young conclusions, my approach to logic, and some things just didn't make sense to me. And when I questioned about these, I didn't get answers. So then I tried to go a little bit deeper and understand what was going on here. And I was often told that, you know, the workings of God are mysterious. We don't always understand it. And that didn't explain to me how the world was working, so I started exploring, seeking, and I sought out other religions, thinking maybe there was a different view. But Christianity still seemed to be, out of all the religions, ones at the point that I felt most comfortable in. However, it wasn't adding up for me. And even the morality and ethics of God, I had to bring into question. And when I realized that I didn't agree with God's ethics, I had a problem. I really started to have to look. And
okay.
As I studied, began to study logic and science, there was a new world opened up to me. One I hadn't seen or considered because I had closed out these possibilities before and clung and believed in my faith. Mm-hmm. And now that I didn't have what I now consider was a bias, I was seeing things in a very different light. And it was reassuring, and it made sense, and I could use it. And that brought me great inner peace.
Okay, that's bringing a question to mind, if you don't mind me asking something.
No, absolutely.
Because it's what you're saying is that the... I have to ask if I can clarify. Are you saying that you believe that the Christian position is not logical? Is that that you have a more logical position than it is, if you believe it's... I'm not sure exactly where you stand on that.
Well, logic, it's about also the evidence in the world that we observe. But what really started the schism in my heart had nothing to do with the facts. It had nothing to do with evolution. It had nothing to do with creationism. It had nothing to do with the question. It had to do with the ethics of God, Adam and Eve, and how they were treated. If it was a literal story or even metaphorical, the idea of Job and what happened there in the conversation, the aspect of, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, Zephatha versus Abraham, and how there seemed to be two different ethics in God when he was treating these people here, or how he punished David by killing his child over a period of time to punish him and make him feel guilty. These are things that I looked up at God and said, I would never do that, God. Why do you do this? Why did you ever do this? Mm-hmm. And why do you say some of the things in here? And I spent years in prayer, tears, seeking, and I got no answers.
Could I ask you a question about that?
I'm very doubtful.
If that's all right, could I ask you a question about that?
Yes.
Let's say... God decided to, like you said in the Bible, God decided to kill off David's child. Why would that be wrong in your worldview?
If you read about it, the child suffered for days before they died. Mm-hmm. They're making a child suffer. What is it? Okay, I would reverse the question. What is it about the suffering of a child inflicted by God that doesn't bother you? Why is it okay for God to hurt us because we're his creations, but not for us to hurt each other?
So why is there
no logical rationale necessarily behind God's love? He doesn't adhere to his own definition in Corinthians that he insists we follow.
Those questions...
God is jealous, he admits it, but
Jared,
God knows no jealousy.
Hang on, Jared.
So how can God love us?
Jared, hang on, Jared.
The truth, never
hang
lies,
on a second.
And his word is absolutely true.
Jared, hang on a second. We have to... because we can't even answer those questions until we answer the basic questions of what mm-hmm. you brought up. You see, because you said your answer to the question when I asked you, you know, why was it wrong for that to happen? And you said, well, the child suffered and he was hurt. And so that just begs the question, why is it wrong to suffer or hurt?
Is it
in your worldview?
Well, because I have empathy. You see, I know what it is to suffer. I've really suffered.
Okay.
Let me explain. I will explain. I've been in my childhood. I've been abused. I had very abusive parents. I have had lots of bad things happen. I've been shot at. I've been stabbed. I know what it is to suffer. Mm-hmm. And suffering is bad. No human wants that. And when I left the faith, I wrote a live journal where I explained that when God could no longer give me a moral compass, the only moral compass I had left was the golden rule, my empathy. And if it bothers someone else, to inflict it upon them would be wrong to me. And that's the basis of my value.
Okay, let me keep us on track then, because when I said, why is it wrong to suffer and hurt, I don't know whether you caught this or not, but in your answer, you said, well, suffering is bad, meaning that suffering is wrong. So when I asked you why suffering is wrong, you said, well, because it's wrong.
No, I said empathy.
Well,
I do not appreciate suffering. I think it's bad when I suffer.
Jara, you don't understand.
I add that to other people. They don't want to suffer either. Jara, it's bad for them to suffer.
Jara, did you not hear what you just said?
Absolutely, I heard what I just said.
Okay, when you said empathy, you went on to explain what you meant by empathy. And you said,
yes.
I feel the suffering, and suffering is bad. So when I asked you why suffering was bad, you repeated yourself and said suffering is bad. So you're saying suffering is bad because it's bad, but that's what I'm trying to ask you if you think that's a logical argument.
Pointless suffering that does not increase strength or benefit you is usually bad. Generally, if you can get to some place like having your arm in pain affects you. It makes you short-tempered. It makes you in a defensive mindset. People who are suffering are not able to love. They're afraid and they're defensive. These are why they're bad things. They're socially, they cause social problems. They cause interpersonal problems.
Okay, so
that's
now,
why
hold on a second.
Is bad.
Now,
it causes problems in society.
But now you're shifting your argument. Jared, did you notice you just shifted your argument? You see, at first what you did was you said that it's wrong, and it's wrong because you have empathy, which is actually an appeal to emotion, which is a logical fallacy. But now you have changed it to what is a social standard.
I thought that the Golden Rule would be representative of that, but when that wasn't, I took it to another level. You're right. I changed an axis, because suffering is wrong on more than one axis, and I can explore others, but there's a social component, there's an interpersonal component, there's a neurological component, there are many different axes that humans don't enjoy suffering, and the idea is, I find it, we all as a society generally have accepted that suffering is something we want to minimize. I don't see why it would be argued that suffering is bad. I'm just not used to having to argue at this level of assumption, but I can do that.
That would be great. I would love for you to. I have very few people that are willing to do that, and I appreciate you doing it. You said there's a neurological...
I don't want it to sound like I'm changing my argument. I'm just decomposing it more and trying to break it down more.
Okay, and that's
and
why...
answer your question honestly.
Well, I would like to address one of your... because, like, one of your points that you said that there was many aspects to it, you said there was a neurological aspect to it. I would have to ask you first, do you believe there are certain laws of morality?
What do you mean, laws of morality?
Well, a certain moral standard that people should adhere to.
Universally or culturally?
Well, I mean, that's
an important.
Here's the next question: is there a difference?
Make a universal tautology? I don't know. That's the most honest answer. There may be, there may not. I don't have access to it. If you're asking me situationally, I can say in many cases, yes, there are obviously some functions and some behaviors that benefit the group or the individual over behaviors that hurt them, and thus that could be used as a way of saying. But it also depends on how many axes you're willing to see how people get hurt. If you try to keep it on a purely economic level, like many of politics do, you're going to get these really weird answers where the data tells you, oh, we should do this, and you do it, and then there's more suffering. People are in economic disarray, and you're like, what's going on here? You're not considering that there's an emotional component to people. They're much more effective when they feel happy and hopeful. And
well, you said there was a neurological aspect
sad,
to this.
They're less motivated and less productive.
Well, I mean, you claim there was a neurological aspect to this.
Let me give you a bit of background about that first.
Okay.
I'm currently studying neuroscience at Wayne State University.
Mm-hmm.
So the neurological studies of the human being and how the mind works, I believe, are very pertinent to our interactions and our ethics and morality.
So are the standards of morality material in nature?
I think they're dynamic in nature.
Could you define that?
Yes. I believe that they're dynamic within the system. I believe that the culture, the views, the logical conclusions people come to based on the information they have will define their highest ethic. There are functional ways of that because of we're built a certain way and we work a certain way. There are going to be certain things that harmonize or resonate with our natural tendencies and habits.
Mm-hmm.
And when we can tap into those and repurpose bad habits and turn that energy into a good or productive habit, that would be more productive. And you can find that by deeply understanding humans. I mean, understanding humans at the deeper neurological functional level.
What I'm hearing from you
is some ethical empiricism, but that's more functional. The rest is largely cultural.
Jared, what I'm hearing from you, though, is that you're claiming that they have a material, that the standards of morality would have a material aspect to them. Is that...
They would have a functional aspect to them that's based on circumstances that have real representations, yes.
So cannot the laws of morality, these standards of morality, change at any time?
I believe so, yes. There are some places that, for example, I fielded an interesting argument on gun rights versus America and Denmark. And there was one real simple argument that really catches in Denmark why they don't need freedom of weapons. They don't feel unsafe. They're very active in their government. Their police are very responsive and largely unarmed. And most of their criminals don't carry guns.
But I'm not going that far.
You don't need guns. But after long conversations and explaining events and such, I came to the conclusion that America and Denmark are two different places. And in America, they agreed, after hearing some of the things and sharing some of my experiences, that a different set of ethics was better here than there because circumstances were different, and that has to be accounted for.
Well, what I'm saying is that you said they were material. I'm not even going that far. I'm actually doing something much more simplistic.
No, I said they were dynamic in nature.
Well,
I never said there was necessarily a material component to ethics. I said they're born of a dynamic.
I'm only deducing from what you're saying.
Ethics, if you understand the dynamics,
Jarrah,
the dynamics do have roots in a physical system, I believe, but they don't necessarily have a physical representation of ethics or morality as we currently throw them at a term around.
So would you say they have they're immaterial then?
Yes.
Okay, so that's what I want to get to. So this comes back to, if there is an immaterial aspect to these, now you said they're not necessarily universal, which means they could be, are they just social conventions then?
Well, I think some of them are social conventions, and some of them are social conventions that evolve to deal with different environments.
If they evolve, hold on a second, if they evolve to deal with different environments, then you're putting a material aspect on them.
But a social dynamic, there is no absolute line that you can separate it. You're asking me if a meta ethics have a material component, a mathematical component. They may possibly have a functional rule set that is derivative from the interactions of us with our environment and how we try to survive in it. That's not to say the same that you're gonna find the roots or a rule set written in fractally, like in small, where it adheres.
Excellent.
May only show up when we get to a certain level of complexity.
So there's nothing that absolutely sets
that, so
in.
You won't find it in the natural world until it actually has a place to exist.
So you won't find it in the natural world, okay, and you're not going to, it's not set to any specific adherence that anybody has to adhere to. So that brings me back to my original question. Why is suffering bad?
The only way I can answer this is reflexively. Would you cause yourself suffering?
That wasn't the question. See, what you're doing, you're asking, hold on a second,
Jarrah,
stop.
Is because Jarrah, humans reject
okay,
Jarrah,
hold on.
When they have a choice Jarrah, between
listen.
Suffering or getting out of it.
Jarrah,
many
listen
of them
to
will
me
choose,
carefully.
When they can see and feel hopeful, they will choose to move away from suffering.
Jarrah, hold on. I'm going to have to stop you for a moment, okay? Because one of the things that you agreed to when you came on the podcast is that you can't dominate the airtime, okay? Hang on a second.
My apologies.
Yeah, it's okay. I understand you have a lot of big thoughts, and I know you want to share them. But what I'm saying here is that when you're saying that if suffering is bad, and when you asked me what would you do, what you're doing is asking me for my opinion. And my opinion is not the determining factor on whether something is right or wrong. Do you understand that?
Okay, I don't. I've shown you. I tried to explain how suffering has negative consequences for the society on different axes. Okay, beyond that.
What was the negative consequence?
It puts people in a defensive mindset. It makes them divisive. It shuts down many bridges of cooperation.
Would you call that suffering?
Opportunity. Suffering has a lot of components, psychologically, physiologically, neurologically. Now,
so what you just said, now listen carefully, what you just said, when I asked,
negative effects.
Okay, but you see, are those negative effects causing them to suffer?
Well, it causes more suffering generally. If you're suffering and lowering productive, you're not going to be as productive.
So Jarrah,
you're not going to reach your goals or find satisfaction.
Yeah, so what
so
I'm
it's
saying...
it's going to have a further negative effect. It can become a vicious cycle.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Jarrah, I agree with you. See, I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying there. What I'm saying is that what you're doing is you continually keep begging the question. Because I ask why suffering is bad, and you keep saying, well, because suffering causes more suffering. And
no,
that's,
because suffering has a negative impact on the survival
and you
of
just,
an individual
you
and a
just
group.
Defined it.
That's
you,
why it's bad.
And, Jarrah, you
I mean,
just defined...
self-evident.
Jarrah, listen to me. You just defined those negative impacts as part of suffering that is part of the vicious cycle of suffering. So you're answering suffering with suffering.
But it has negative impacts on your productivity.
You're not
that's
even listening to me, are you?
Impact. That's okay. Look,
you're not listening
is,
to me
why
at all.
Okay. End of life is considered bad. Most people don't want to die at a young age. They want to do things in life. They want to interact. They want to contribute to society.
But
if
why is that bad?
They're getting closer to death.
Why is
produce.
Death bad?
They can't be a part of society. This bothers them. The whole value of human... Oh, yes, I see the question that's being asked here. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm answering the wrong question here.
Yeah.
The only thing that I believe creates value in the universe is human appreciation. Meaning, if humans don't like something, and it doesn't serve them, that makes it bad for us. And that is the metric I use. I'm not under the impression that there's a universal metric somewhere that says suffering is bad in the universe. It's our response to it and our appreciation of it that I say makes it bad.
Okay,
other
so
humans
to take
say
an example,
suffering is bad.
To take
we agree that suffering is bad, therefore I try to avoid suffering.
Well,
that's
first of all, you're also saying that when you say we agree that suffering is bad, you're arguing for majority opinion there, and that's supposed to be a logical fallacy too. If you, for example,
not
if someone
if
is...
it actually represents a logical fact or truth, though. Fallacies can be used
no, wait a second.
If they actually represent the truth.
You just said something illogical can be used to claim something as logical.
That it's fallacious logic.
Jarrett, you just said that something illogical can prove something is logical.
No, I said not all fallacies are fallacies all the time. Something that can appear as a fallacy, for example, if the majority says they want strawberry ice cream, then the fact logically is that strawberry ice cream is preferred in that society. This is not a majority rule, it's a fallacy, it's a statement of fact.
Exactly.
Since
and
your
here's
preference
what,
is
here's
for strawberry,
the difference.
It is factual to say you're going to do good if you bring strawberry there.
Okay,
that,
Jarrett,
that's
what
kind
you
of
have to understand,
here.
The two things you just compared are not related, and I'm going to explain to you why. When
okay.
you said that people like, you know, they want strawberry ice cream, they're telling you about their desires. But you see, a standard of morality, that is something that goes outside of what people personally may want or desire at any one particular time. It's a set of
mm-hmm.
standards. It's a conceptual scheme.
You're
so,
right,
so
there
when
are cultural
you're,
forces that also impress us as well.
So the conceptual scheme is not necessarily determined by majority opinion. Because if it is, if it is, let's say...
determined by the dynamic.
Do you believe that rape is wrong?
Yes.
Okay, now let's say that a society, let's say America decided, everybody got together, the majority, 51% got together and decided that rape was right. Would it be okay for people to rape each other?
In that society, it wouldn't be punished, but I would still not agree with it.
Okay,
but in the society,
there, that's
no
what I want to know, Jared.
Against rape if they didn't enforce that.
That's what I wanted to hear, Jared, because what you're saying is that the majority does not determine these standards, and you're agreeing with me on that by saying that. So I'm asking you, why is rape wrong in Jared's worldview? Why is that suffering bad?
I can't answer your question, sir, because I've told you it's empathy. I feel what the rapist feels, and I don't like those responses.
Okay, so...
And since I don't like that resonance in me, I assume that resonance exists in them. Then I make
okay.
a choice. I say, wait, I want to be a human. This is another person like me. They feel like me. I should step up and stop this from happening to them. Unless they go, hey, I'm okay with this. Then I'll be like, what? Are you sure? And if I'm sure that it's just like, maybe it's, you know, a show or something, but, like, I'm not going to stand by. I'll move forward because of my empathy. It's that reflection. There's nothing outside of us, I think, that's invoking this right or wrong in me, except for how we respond to these things.
Okay.
And when we respond in fear or disappreciation, unappreciation, okay, others of us will feel that through empathy, and it will give us a sense that this is bad. And that's largely what guides cultural trends.
Okay, and do you
if
understand
you,
that that's called
an
appeal to...
If you don't accept that, we can argue that, but I don't...
Jarrett, I'm just saying, that's an appeal to emotion. That's a logical fallacy.
You feel that's an appeal to an emotion?
Absolutely. I don't feel it's appeal to emotion. It is appeal to emotion. You should look up appeal to emotion.
No,
it's when
I'm
you appeal to empathy as
I'm
a logical
appealing
argument.
I'm appealing to people's emotion that they agree with this. I'm saying that people act on their emotions. That's not an appeal to emotion. That's a fact.
No,
people
no, your appeal to emotion.
Emotion.
I didn't say your
Jera. Jera,
wait.
People respond to emotions. Jera,
you got to slow down, buddy. Okay, you can't dominate the airwaves here. Hold on a second.
Right.
I did not say your reaction to it was an appeal to emotion. The argument that something becomes right or wrong based on how you feel is an appeal to emotion, and therefore, in turn, also a majority doing this is not only an appeal to majority, but it's also an appeal to emotion at the same time. So when
that doesn't change
what you
the fact
answered
that they're
earlier,
still using that fallacious logic to build their cultural right and wrong. It's,
exactly.
I mean, yes, it's an appeal
and therefore,
to emotion what they're doing, but that's not fallacious to say that's what they're doing.
And therefore, when you said you cannot answer why something is right or wrong, I felt you were being very honest because you have really no reason to say why rape is wrong other than you feel that way, and that's a logical fallacy. So when you in turn say that God was wrong because he did this thing, you're acting only on your own standards of morality, which you have no answer for.
Correct. And my ethics are, I feel, superior to the ones that God displays in the Bible.
There we go.
One of the core reasons I walked away.
Exactly, Jarrah. And I suspected that from the last time I talked to you privately, because you
walked away. I'll be clear about that. If that's
you walked away.
I will admit that flat out.
Oh yeah, you walked away from the Christian doctrine because
I base my ethics on my empathy, and
yeah.
I feel God based his ethics on.
So you have placed yourself as a God above God, and that's why you turned away from the Christian faith to begin with. Is
if
because
you want to look at it that way,
yes, God is the standard for morality.
Ethics, and I felt they were superior.
So that's and there's
God
the problem.
Respond.
Is because
if God had responded and talked to me in all those years of prayer, which when I get to this point of argument, most people have heard that I've had years of prayer. Mm-hmm. But let's not just assume that I put myself above God just as a momentary thing. I spent years in prayer and crying. I said, trying to make sense of this without an answer. So, without a better answer after years of searching, I just started looking at the evidence. I began to assume that maybe there wasn't someone there to answer me, mm-hmm. like I had been taught there would be.
But you see, what you did is you went from a system that has that says, like, for example, my I stand on the Christian God of the Bible, okay? That's mm-hmm. that's my presupposition. And
yeah.
with that, I can give an explanation for laws of morality and why people should meet certain standards, why rape is wrong, why things like
why
that
is wrong.
Wrong. And then you have, well, hang on a second, I'll answer your question, but I want to finish what I'm saying here. What you did is you turned to another system, which you yourself have admitted has no answer for those standards of morality, but you feel it was more logical, even though it has no answers.
You aren't accepting my answer. I already gave you the answer. I said it's empathy. But what
which
you,
is logical fallacy.
Empathy isn't something, I guess, I don't know if you know what I mean when you say empathy. Empathy is a neurological process that takes place between humans. It's physiologically
It's what? It's what?
You can see
it's,
empathy.
Did you just
take
say did you just say physiological?
Yes,
so you are now retracting
aspect of empathy.
Then you are now retracting your last statement that they're immaterial, and that now you're saying the laws of logic are material then.
No, I said it's the dynamic. The empathy does empathy doesn't necessarily build your
but you see
moral
if empathy if it's just physiological
your understanding of the social dynamic
but if it's just physiological Jarrah
morality and ethical
Jarrah you know
you can't paint it with a tautology or a simple brush
Jarrah
it's elegant but it's also complicated
Jarrah you know full well as I do that if it's physiological in nature it's material in nature because my like your brain and my brain we don't have the same brain so they can't work in the same ways which means any kind of standard of morality is completely subjective and it can change on the whim.
We don't have the same brain is not absolutely a truth. We have different thoughts and we have a different arrangement to our brain, but there's a great part of our brain that work and look and act and operate identically. Okay, so there's a lot of similarity between brains. And there's a specific neuron called the mirror neuron that is charged with firing when it basically recreating you in you emotions that other people are feeling. Everyone has them.
Okay,
this
so well, let's
us to feel and self-assess and self-reflect. That doesn't necessarily create the rules for our morality, though. You want me to answer? Yes, there.
Okay.
In that light, there could be said to be a physiological aspect of morality. But if you try to go and look at it with that kind of approach, it's not necessarily going to be relevant. And I'm not.
Hold on. We need to stop right there because when you say it's not relevant, it might not be relevant to you and your worldview, but it's certainly not irrelevant to ask the question because it does play a part. Because, for example, if it's just physiological in nature, and are all brains 100% the same? I don't think you would agree with that.
And it's not
and
just
so
physiological.
The very
in
fact.
If you take a brain and grew it in
Jarrah, let me finish.
Any sensory input or any other people. It's
Jarrah,
not going to develop ethics.
Hold on. Jarrah, I'm going to have to give you a second warning here. You can't dominate the airwaves, okay? You have to let me give you a chance to respond here.
Sure.
Because what you're saying, if there were no rapists in the world, then I would agree that everybody's brain's going to react the same way. But obviously, not everybody reacts the same way on that. So, I mean, the question then becomes, from any logical perspective, could it be right for rape to occur? Or if somebody chooses to rape and somebody doesn't, are they both right? You see, what I'm trying to say is that there is a standard of morality that goes outside of mankind.
I hear you saying that. I haven't had any evidence of that. I prayed for years looking for it and read the same Bible you did.
Okay.
And I questioned deeply. So why?
Because, listen, the reason you rejected what you used to believe and you're accepting now is because I think what you have always had a presupposition that the Bible is not 100% true in your heart.
You think so? I was born with that, huh?
Well, I think
so. God created me with the presupposition.
Hey,
that
he created us all.
Believe his word. Why would God do that?
He created us all with presuppositions.
Why
in our head?
Why did he create me like that, though?
But the question is, when God calls out to you, it's whether or not you accept him as the authority instead of yourself.
So he created a situation in me which has actually put me away from him to help teach me how to accept him as
authority. No, the problem was when he called out to you.
His morality and don't understand his ethics, I should submit.
No, I think you do. Hold on a second, Jero. I actually believe you do understand his ethics.
And that is why I left the faith.
I think, Jero, wait a second.
You were trying to tell me how to make it more humanist and loving.
Jero, I think you do understand his ethics very well.
Yes, I do understand.
You still believe.
I used to study it.
I know.
Seminary.
You still believe.
I understand what the entity did. I've read the Bible. I don't understand why. I don't understand why he killed so many of us, why he made so many of us suffer us, and why he gave us such incomplete information to start out with. I don't understand. You are absolutely correct.
Okay, so that's why we need to take the presupposition that he's the one that has the knowledge and ask him for it. Now,
I'm not taking that presupposition
anymore. Okay,
why should I take that presupposition when I've already taken that presupposition, done years of experimentation, and gotten no results?
Well, because you can't prove anything outside of God to begin with.
I couldn't even prove something to myself in my heart. Why should I trust anything I don't feel that's true in my heart?
Exactly.
Even
you can't prove anything.
Especially if I can't prove it logically.
Exactly. You can't prove anything outside of God. It's not even possible. So you went
to
a position.
No, I'm not agreeing to that. That's your assertion, but there's no way I agree to that.
Okay.
So what I'm saying
is let's possible.
Put logic aside then and say, what?
Wait,
God
what?
Is a matter of heart. Why hasn't
wait,
he spoke to mine?
Could you repeat that? Hold on.
Now for answers.
Hold on.
Go on the air, and I'm going to make an honest prayer to God.
Jero.
And I will seek answers.
Jero, could you repeat what you just said? Let's put logic aside.
Let's put logic aside.
There shows your presupposition.
Okay, right?
You see, because...
If you said you can't discover any truth outside of God. That's not a logical assertion. So
I didn't say,
Jero,
you got, so Jero, hold on a second.
On that level. Let's set logic aside, and let's go at this religiously.
Jero.
Let's see if I get an answer.
Jero, you need to stop. Hold on.
Jero.
Okay, Jero, last warning. Last warning, Jero. You can't dominate the airwaves.
Mm-hmm.
You're making tons of assertions about what I believe without letting me respond, okay?
Okay.
Because
sorry,
if you keep doing this, I'll have to hang up on...
I don't want to have to hang up on you, Jero.
That's why I keep saying this, okay? Mm-hmm. Now listen. Well, first of all, I didn't say you can't come to any truths outside of God. I said you can't prove them.
I disagree.
Okay, now I understand you disagree. So do you believe there are laws of logic then?
Yes.
Okay,
are
they universal?
Yes.
They're universal. Okay, how did
they're
you determine this?
They're internally consistent. Logic is internally consistent.
Have you tested the laws of logic everywhere throughout the universe?
No. Look, deductive logic, there are two types of logic. There's deductive and inductive. Which are we talking about? Well, there are more types than that, but those are the two primary ones. Deductive has a very specific purpose. And inductive has another purpose. Which one are you referring to?
Either
and
one.
Do you know the
difference? It doesn't matter, because if you haven't tested them in all
I
places...
I tested them, but which one do you want to talk about?
You've tested
both
wait a second.
Of them, but they have different purposes.
Give me any law
which
of logic.
Do you want to discuss
give
the test
me
of?
Give me any law of logic that you want to discuss.
The law
and tell
of identity.
Me, okay, and tell me where you have tested this.
It's self-evident, the law of identity. A thing is...
So what you just said is it's
a
logical
thing
because...
A is A. If you pick up an apple, it's an apple.
Hold on.
It's not an orange, it's an apple.
Jero, what you just said was that it is logical because it's logical. Now,
yes,
if I say...
I said logic is internally consistent. That's
so
correct.
So then what you would have to do is also accept the argument. If I say God exists because he exists, you have to accept that argument as logical.
I accept it as internally consistent. I don't accept it as logical. You're mistaking... what I think you don't understand here, and if I may have a moment, but I'll take
That's all I had to say, is because if you were going to accept the one, you would have to accept the other. Because if you're going to say that, for example, with your self-identity, asking questions like to catch up our audience in case they don't understand what we're talking about, you know, to say, why would you suspect that you did not have your memories implanted in you and were created 30 seconds ago, and you're now picking up this conversation where it started 30 seconds ago? How could you even understand when you wake up in the morning that you weren't just created then and just came into the world and had the memories implanted into you? How would you know?
Well, in a way, neurologically, that may be what happens to us as sentiences when we wake up every morning. But let's get back to logic and testing.
That is logic.
First, I would like to ask you a question. We both studied logic, yes?
Well, okay. I study my Bible.
What are the three formal laws of logic, and do you know what they are?
Well, why don't you tell me what they are?
Okay, there's first the law of identity, which is A is A, A cannot be B, and A. Okay, there's the law of the excluded middle. Okay? A cannot be and B at the same time. Alright? And
so
I forget
the law of non-contradiction.
The third one, but I can look it up for you. It's been a long time since I studied the basics of formal logic.
How did you prove who you
all
are?
All the other logical rule sets are derived, and logic isn't tested in the world. What it's done is you make observations, you apply deductive logic to make sure that the information you came to is logical. You can't use deductive logic to produce prediction about
Jared,
the world.
I agree with you. I agree with exactly what you're saying. I don't think you understand that. Now listen carefully.
Because
when you said you have to make you're saying that, you know, these aren't just tested, you know, these aren't just like a science experiment, you know. And what you're saying is exactly correct, because just what I said earlier in the podcast show, it's a schematic of thought, like a way of thinking that we're supposed to adhere to. So my question then comes to, how did you validate that your reasoning on that was valid?
Good question. There's another aspect of logic called inductive logic that you need to really use deductive logic. And inductive logic lets you take an incomplete data set and make predictions. Then you overlay that with deductive logic, check those predictions. If those predictions are true, your system works. When I use logic to do this, I always get true. I always get true, and if I don't, I can usually find the mistake in my logic, and when I can't, someone else always has. But when I apply the system of the internally consistent system of the Bible to the world and expect results, I pray to God for answers, I don't get them. I don't understand what's going on. I live in a chaos of noise, and no one's speaking to me.
Well, I think you just didn't get the answers you wanted.
And I go with that. The other provides confusion, and I don't understand it.
Well, there are answers to a lot of your questions, okay? We could talk about that for a long time. And I think you just didn't get the answers you wanted. But here's the problem. When you're talking about, you know, well, there's certain things we have to, you know, with induction and things like that. I mean, there's
inductive logic, not induction.
Well, okay, induction.
Not
sorry. Inductive logic.
These are key fundamental points. If you brush them aside like that, it shows that you're not actually appreciating. These are the things that put rockets in space.
Okay.
And let us
Hold
communicate
on.
Over the internet right now. You're brushing aside the very building blocks of the medium where you
no,
need to have
hold on.
This communication.
Jared,
right
I am
now.
Not I'm not brushing that aside, because you need to understand my position is not that atheists can't be logical. My position is that they can't prove that they are logical, and they can't verify their logic at all.
I can agree that atheists
now listen,
aren't logical,
when you said,
I don't believe atheists
Jared,
are logical.
Let me talk for a minute, okay? Let me talk for a minute. I've let you talk for a long time here. I want to go on. Now listen, when you talk about, you know, how do you verify certain things? Now, when you were talking about the certain experiments that you have predictability power, I've heard all this before. Now the problem is on what basis that you assume the future is going to be like the past? Because in that, you have to make an assumption, the base assumption, that the future is going to be like the past. So the question comes then, on what basis did you verify that it's reasonable to assume that the future is going to be like the past? And if you say, hold on, you see, I knew you were going to answer that. That's what I was about to say. If you give the very answer that you just gave, you're now still assuming that the future is going to be like the past, and all you did was beg the question.
I was going to explain why they give you that, okay? Not just say inductive logic. I'm going to explain why inductive logic allows you to do that.
Okay?
And it has to do with the fact that in logic, there's this concept that you don't make things up, that you don't see. And so you take the information us use that phrase, or one can assume it will happen the same again. When one then sees it happen again, they go, okay, it seems to be happening, and they watch it for a while.
You're assuming the future's like the past.
But that's not why it's happening. That just says every time you observe it, it seems to be happening again, and you're right. It doesn't mean it happens, it's going to happen the same time every way. You are correct.
So the laws of logic are not then laws. They can change at any time.
That you stop at, and logicians go on with.
And what step is that?
That's the step of breaking it down, decomposing it, finding out how it works, functionally, and seeing why it produces these results. And you can use induction and deduction to test that information, and you can use statistical logic, and you can use mathematical logic as well to help create abstract models that represent values, and you can then build a model. Now, that's just a model.
Mm-hmm.
You then test the model and see if it actually mimics the reality and predicts the results.
Exactly.
Especially in systems where otherwise, without the model, you can't predict the result.
And you're talking about predictive power.
Hey, this seems to be working. There's no guarantee that at some point it will break down. And when that happens, it usually doesn't lead us to throw out the model. It actually says, wait, there's an exception here. There's more. And we use deductive and inductive logic to decompose.
I am not disagreeing with you.
And we broaden and refine our understanding.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm not disagreeing with you. I actually agree with everything you just said.
Okay.
I'm going back to the beginning, that you did all this based on the assumption that the future is going to be like the past. So the question is, how...
Wait to see if it happens.
Exactly. It's just an assumption, just like you said. I appreciate that. Now, you're assuming the sun's going to rise tomorrow, but you don't know that it is.
Correct.
I know that it will. That's different.
Okay. That's illogical, though.
Yeah, you see, from your worldview, it is. From your particular worldview, it's illogical. From the Christian worldview, it's not illogical at all.
Well, that's
because
semantic.
The basis on knowing...
making assumptions that I can't make, you go and make one.
Oh, no. I have a presupposition the same as you do. I'm not arguing against that. My presupposition...
Yeah, but it's not necessarily logically supported. It's rhetorically and anecdotally supported. And while I can hear the intuitive understanding of why this should happen, it doesn't always logically parse.
Yeah, but God is the one that gave, he invented logic, he gave us logic, he made our brains to be logical, and they are a schematic frame of reference. It's a schematic thinking process, a map, on how we are supposed to think, and how to think logically. Now, that's the Christian presupposition on that, and by that, through his word, he has said certain things were going to be standard until the day Jesus Christ comes back. So I know full well, as long as Jesus Christ doesn't come back tomorrow, the sun's going to rise tomorrow. Because he said they would be that way. But I'm asking from your worldview how you can know that, and you said it's an assumption. You have no idea.
Well, I also understand how the world is spinning, and that the gravitational forces lead unless...
On the exact same assumptions.
The sun's going to come back around. So
on the exact same assumptions.
I didn't phrase the question that way, but you're not really getting an honest answer. I'll give you the answer you want, but it doesn't really represent... I mean, I do have a lot of Bayesian appreciation of what's going to happen next, because... While you've been studying the Bible, I've also been studying the human brain. I understand how we come to conclusions, and I'm starting to get a deeper understanding into that. Mm-hmm. And logic being a product, logic was not necessarily... if logic was created by God, it didn't come into play until way after he got done creating us. Because most of the concepts of logic arose over time, and were developed and refined.
How do you know that?
Because you can... Well, you're right. I have to take the histories, and I guess that could have all been... I guess that could have all been falsified. I don't know that. That's an assumption I make.
Well, I appreciate... Man, that's probably one of the most honest answers I've ever heard.
That's what I can't say for certainty, but you're right. I assume that. But that, I mean, by the same token, what makes the Bible real then?
Well, that's my presupposition.
I
have to presuppose...
The Bible, and you have to admit it's just as valid.
I presuppose it to be true, and God has provided evidence for it at the same time. I have to use both.
I say you presuppose it to be true, therefore you interpret the evidence within your bias.
Exactly.
And that's reflected
and because
in
you
how
presuppose
your brain fires.
Exactly,
even
I agree.
Even at the neurological level, so I have a physiological explanation for why you come to this conclusion.
Oh, no. You see, because you're claiming the laws of logic are material.
Well, the laws of thought are born in a material... entrepreneurial system.
Okay, so then all they are is just social conventions. They're just, you know, what happens in your side of your brain is not necessarily what happens inside of my brain. So what happens, Jarrett, listen, what happens inside, Jarrett, listen to me. What happens
by which we carve out our civilization and build our
Jarrett, you're going to have to listen for a second.
That's the technology that we live by. Social conventions are...
Jarrett, I don't want to have to hang up on you, buddy. Hold on. What happens inside of your brain compared to what happens inside of my brain is not a law. That's just something you believe. It's not a law.
Yes.
So when you say there are laws of logic, you're referring to something that is immaterial. It's abstract, immaterial.
Yes.
It's universal.
An eternally abstract, consistent system.
It's universal, and it's invariant. Mm-hmm. But you have said yourself you have not tested all the laws of logic everywhere across the universe. It's impossible for you to do that. You're now saying they have a physiological aspect, which means they're not immaterial. And if those two are true, then how can you therefore say that they're invariant, that they won't change?
How can you say, therefore, the Bible is true and you can presuppose that?
Because my presupposition, God, says that there can be. I can explain.
Is a little, it's not based off of one source. Even if I'm making a presupposition, my presupposition is based off of the sources across the world by many men who have spoken in many languages and come to the same conclusions. So... presupposing you're going with a book, I'm going with the human race and our technological base.
Well, amen to that. You know, if you want to, I'll go with the word of God over mankind any day. But the thing is, if you want to say that you're going to, you know, this is what you're going to stand with, all these men that you're referring to, if they are throwing off God as the source of their knowledge, what they're now relying on their limited aspects, and they have no answer for how they can explain how immaterial, abstract, invariant universal entities can even exist in their worldview.
But they don't have to if they don't exist.
There it is, right there. We don't have to.
The question isn't a matter of,
see, and that's,
I'm an agnostic. If you want to ask me if God exists, I'll say I don't know. I have no proof of him.
Yeah.
I'm not telling you your God doesn't exist. I'm telling you I have no experience with him.
See,
and
so what you're saying...
I have some experience with him, I can't really make an observation.
Jira, I need to point out to the audience what you just said a moment ago when you said, and they don't have to. So when I ask you for the explanation for your knowledge, you just say, I know what I know, and I don't have to tell anything, explain anything to anybody. Well, that's
not at all. That's not what I said.
That is exactly.
You know that's not true.
But that's exactly what you just stated, is that you don't have to give
an
explanation.
I don't know what it was. Maybe you misheard me.
Because the basis of your knowledge would have to be founded in logic somehow, otherwise you don't have real knowledge.
Okay, see, because, first off, we had knowledge before we had logic. Logic is just a tool that helps
How would you know you had knowledge if you can't logically compare to see if you have it?
Empiricism has existed before logic.
Let me ask you a question.
Empiricism still works.
Let me ask you a question. This is one that Eric Hoven used to pose to some people. I've heard him do this before. Mm-hmm. He says, do you have knowledge that Elvis Presley is the current president of the United States?
Do I have knowledge? I have not heard anything about that.
Okay, so is it knowledge to say that Elvis Presley is the current president of the United States?
I would say it's an assertion. Knowledge is...
But it's not real knowledge.
Now it becomes knowledge if people start sharing it. It becomes a part of the knowledge base, but it's not a factual bit of the knowledge base.
Okay, so you just claimed it's not a factual bit. You used logic to do that. So the only way to verify that you have knowledge at all is to use logic, so you can't have knowledge without logic.
Okay, no. I don't need logic to pick up the glass, drop it, know that it'll fall. I've just seen that happen a lot, and I intuitively, because of my animal brain, the one that has been moving me through this world, it picks out patterns of repetition and assumes they're important. That's a neurological function.
And how did
and if you...
you
ignore these little nuances, then yes, it does appear that you can't get anywhere or get any information.
So,
logic and the way we go about getting information as a very circular subject and locking it into a bunch of not false, but simplistic arguments. And I see what you're saying, but the semantics don't hold up against, the empirical evidence.
See, but when you talked to me over the phone in private, you had told me that you felt your position, that you moved into a logical position. But now do you see on this show how you're trying to separate logic from knowledge?
That's because logic doesn't give you absolute truth. It gives you functional understanding. If you're looking for absolute truth, then I can't give you that. I can't give you the absolute
I can give you absolute truth.
Good or bad. That's not how I view the universe anymore. Those kind of questions have become ultimately irrelevant. They don't serve me, and they never served me as a young man either.
That's so contrary.
You're looking for absolute answers. You're right. Logic isn't going to give you that. You need to presuppose something, and then you've got your absolute. And if you do that, I can see how you come to these conclusions. Mm-hmm. But you have to let go of the desire for absolutes and open your mind to the question.
Exactly. You have to let go of anything that's absolute in this world and enter into a dark woods where there is no answer.
Yes, so do I have absolutes I can argue here? No, I don't. But I don't have any absolutes I can give you with logic.
So if you see
what we observe and what works, that's all I can tell you.
But that's what confuses me.
Is that if being an agnostic,
if you wanted a more logical position,
whether God exists or not, I can tell you I don't know, and unless I have evidence, it's kind of silly to say he does or doesn't in my case.
Oh, there's plenty of evidence, and even the Bible says in Romans chapter 1 that you already know he exists, even just by observation of the creation. So,
okay, that's the pointless assertion, though. I could say, you know, the flying spaghetti monster exists by simply, or I could say that about anything because you observe stuff. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean God exists. That doesn't logically follow.
Okay, do you want to follow the logic to say that the flying spaghetti monster created logic, and therefore you have some sort of documented evidence for this?
I don't think that's actually illogical. No, I would never presuppose that argument.
Okay, yeah, and that's why I presuppose the Christian argument, because
you're making these assertions, and you're not supporting them necessarily, except you say, well, I presuppose, and I would
I'm not even asking you to support what you're saying. I'm just simply asking you for how you can explain abstract, invariant, universal entities in your worldview, and you've told me you can't. And so if you want a better worldview, I would say you would ascribe to the Christian worldview that can do that. We can explain those things.
With a God in it.
Because we can actually explain.
I don't agree with the ethics.
We can explain the metaphysical problem that's the foundation of all knowledge.
I don't know. Okay. I'm not uncomfortable with saying I don't know, though, because I honestly don't know. I don't want to say I know something that I don't know and just have faith in.
Yeah, me neither.
That's the problem. My intellectual honesty gets in the way of me being a Christian. I don't know it's true. If you ask me if it's true, I can at best say I highly doubt it, but it might be. I can't prove it's not. And that's all any atheist can really say. But if you want to look at the evidence and try and get to an answer from that, you come to slightly different conclusions.
Exactly.
And that's really the issue here.
So let me finish out this statement so I can state this to you. What I'm doing is I'm putting my faith in the one who knows everything in the universe to tell us what happens in the universe, and you in turn are putting your faith in yourself, who does not know hardly anything about the universe.
Okay, can we test that?
Any knowledge.
Can we test that?
Can we test it? Oh, yeah,
and
sure, you can test things.
We're putting our faith in an entity who has all knowledge, and he gives you that knowledge. And I'm putting my faith in my own incomplete knowledge. You are correct.
Now,
let's do a quick test.
No, we can test things. Now listen
and
carefully.
You pray to God, and he'll give you the knowledge.
Now,
and you share it with me. And if you and
that's not the way this works, and you know that full well.
No, I don't know that. Why can't we do a simple experiment on prayer?
Because
why are experiments not allowed within the realms of validating religious claims?
Why is that not allowed? Because that's not the way it works. God reveals what knowledge he chooses to reveal. I can't force him to reveal knowledge to me or to you.
But I'm asking. I've been asking my whole life. Every Christian I come to makes the argument. I say, just show me it works. And all of them give me this answer. You know that's not how it works. No, I don't know that.
Okay.
I don't know how it works because I've never gotten this information.
Okay, so
what's
happening?
So I don't understand what you're talking about, and I'm asking you guys to show me, and where the rest of the world can show me that at least it works in the local, I don't get anything from the Christian except I have to faith and read the Bible and understand it and live it.
You've just admitted that you can't.
Clear. I did that for most of my life, and I got really hurt and confused.
I know you got hurt and confused because God refused to give you an answer you were looking for, and it also revealed your heart, your underlying heart, that you weren't really. You didn't really want that. You wanted something else, and so you went to the something else that you actually wanted, and it wasn't him. It was what
you
wanted.
Oh, you think I didn't really want God? See, you don't know my mind and heart. How could you say that? Even the Bible, your Bible says, no man knows the heart and mind of another.
That's true.
I'm being honest with you. I really wanted to serve God. I'm really scared of dying and going away. The idea of an afterlife was comforting. I don't have that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there was a really persuasive argument here for me to step away from the fact of, hey, maybe you're going to die forever. But I actually had to consider that if that was a realistic case, because I would hate to die and live this life and go through all of this expecting a paradise or a reward afterward, and there's nothing.
Yeah.
The bad guys win. They just win, because there's no good guy taking care, take and score. And I pray, looking for that good God, and I haven't found it. And I ask all my Christian friends for this one simple experiment, or any experiment that could show it works. Are there any you can offer me? You have a connection to this being. Can you make a believer out of me? I'm not that far.
No.
I know the story.
Actually,
I read the book. Help me make sense
Jared,
of it.
Let me answer you. No, I can't. And when I came into this podcast, when I was talking with you, and I want other Christians to understand this too, I have no intentions to convert you because I can't do it. And the Bible says specifically in 2 Timothy 2:25 that only God gives repentance to acknowledgement of the truth. And if you don't ask him for that repentance and that knowledge and acknowledging of the truth, you're never going to acknowledge the truth.
You don't think I did that?
Well,
I mean, I know this. I know this. And I went through the prayer. I sought after God's heart like David did. David was the most beloved of God because he sought to know God. And I wanted to know the mind of God as a young minister. When I left, if you go visit my life's journal where you'll see it, I've left everything up. When I left the faith, people were pretty surprised I was leaving. I was a dedicated, solid, I really believed in Christ's story, the message of love.
And the Bible says Jesus Christ himself... Listen, Jesus Christ himself said, not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, will enter in the kingdom of heaven. And I'll tell you why. In Romans 1:21, there's just a couple verses I'd like to quote to you here, if you don't mind me doing it. I don't mean to cause offense. But in Romans 1:21, it says, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, and neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And that's, I mean, I don't mean you an insult. I mean, that's what I'm seeing in what you've said so far.
God
is
saw
you have
that the
claimed...
way I would respond to him not answering my questions, this is what you're presupposing to me, okay? And I want you to understand this is slightly offensive. In my searches for God, at some point, since I wouldn't, without hearing an answer, I would give up and start looking elsewhere, like, I don't know, a rational human being. He said, because you're going to do that after years of searching and suffering and asking me, then I'm not going to answer you until you're ready to follow me on complete blind faith. But I don't do blind faith. I'm not one of those people who can do blind faith.
But Jared, that's exactly what you're doing now. You don't see that. You've just admitted to me that you can't really know things for absolutely certain, but you say you're not living on blind faith, and that you don't have answers now, but you believe that you may be able to know them in the future. You are living by blind faith, and you went off professing yourself to be wise over God.
I guess if that's how you look at it, but
listen, Jared,
God who doesn't answer isn't exactly,
and this
over isn't exactly my idea of a rational approach to fixing my problems.
And Jared, I want you to understand, these accusations, I'm not saying this, I'm telling you what the Bible says.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with my life. That has no reflection on my life. Yes, these may be other people, but you're not describing me. So how does this apply to me? I was an honest looking Christian looking for God. And since you refuse me any experiment, I'll accept that I can't give you any absolute answers. But how can I mean, you can't give me any either.
Well, Jared, you already know of him. Did you want God to appear to you? Is that what you wanted?
No, I just want him to. He could be a voice. It could be an answer. It could be. But right now, at this point, just a simple answer. I have something that he could say that he knows, or anything he probably knows. It says he knows me better than I do, so he knows exactly what to say that I'll recognize. All we have to do is pray for that little bit of information. And if it comes, it comes. But you see, everyone has this reluctance to say, they all want to assure you that God doesn't answer on your time. And that is just, I'm sorry, I like the way humans treat me over God, the way God has treated me. I like the way my fellow atheists look out for me and come to me when I'm in pain. I like the way
I thought you were an agnostic.
I can't connect with God.
You said fellow atheists. I thought you were an agnostic.
I am, but most of the people I hang out with are atheists.
Oh, okay, all right.
Not militant, mind you. I don't hang out with many militant atheists, but they're not necessarily agnostic. They're not willing to say, they just say God doesn't exist until they have evidence. They're going to assume
that. But you see, Jared,
I don't even assume that.
There's a problem here, though, is that because you know that they, none of them, can really verify their knowledge, and that none of them have a set standard of morality that anybody can choose to live by,
Yes,
so you
do.
Don't.
They
so,
have a very set standard.
No. Listen to me. Listen to me, Jarrah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You just told us earlier. You said you couldn't really give an answer to this stuff on where the set of standard of morality was come from, but you believe that they're moral. So you only believe that they're treating you good, and you believe that God is treating you bad. That's what
you
believe.
Because you don't accept
that's,
answers unless they come in the form of a universal absolute, which
that's
is
your faith,
to have.
Though.
And you're right. From that position, I can't argue. I have no strong arguments because I only have the evidence and what we can make of it. You have your presuppositions and your story, which explains how everything comes together. And you won't provide me any evidence for that, yet they'll provide me evidence for their understanding.
Oh, the Bible's my evidence.
I end up going with the people who've got the evidence.
The Bible's my evidence.
Yeah,
the Bible's the best evidence I've got.
It's a book that I've read, and I disagree with some of the things in there. I don't understand.
I see. That's my point.
I turn to God,
it's not
as
that
said.
It's not that the that's not that it's the evidence is incorrect. Just like we said, there's certain things that you don't believe, and that is what reveals your heart, and that's what you should know is the reason God is not answering you at all.
I think you got this backwards. My heart changed because I couldn't come to a conclusion. You think my heart has always been hardened against God?
I think there's a lot of people out there who are dedicating themselves in so many different ways, and in my opinion, needless ways, because of what I read in the Bible, there's all sorts of things that they dedicate themselves to that are absolutely unnecessary, according to the modern-day American churchianity. And some of the problems that you had mentioned to me privately about some of what the American modern-day churches are doing and what modern-day, you know, New Age so-called Christians are doing is complete poppycock. I mean, I don't agree with a lot of what's going on in there, and I get a lot of flack for it. So I understand where you're coming from on that one.
Okay.
But the basics of what God's Word is telling us is that in the beginning, our hearts are going to, once we reach a certain age of accountability the Bible talks about, that we are going to, our sinful nature is going to begin to take over our flesh, and we have a choice to make. And
why
that
were we designed like that again?
Oh, we weren't.
Oh, we
you
weren't?
See, that,
God
absolutely
created,
not.
Oh, wait. Didn't God create us perfect in His image?
Yeah, God created us perfectly. Everything
then
was very good.
Why didn't we do sin? We were made in God's perfect
because would you
image.
Like? Are you asking God to take away your choice, a free will?
Do you think choice has to be so black and white? I mean, is it really that simple that it has to be heaven or hell? Sin,
he only
or,
said,
or,
"Don't eat
follow
off."
Follow God completely. Those are the only two options.
He said, "Enjoy
I mean, why
everything."
Why is the universe painted in such broad strokes in the Bible?
Jarrah,
that's
hold on a second. He
no,
said,
I don't want God to take away my free choice. I asked why God designed me with the ability to make self-destructive choices. If I build a program that crashes as a developer, I'm considered an unsuccessful developer. But God has created a race that pretty much fails consistently, and He's considered a successful God.
Oh, He's always a successful God, but here's the problem.
Of course. He's always successful irregardless of the results of His work. That's
well,
not logic.
Yes, it is.
Quality assessment. That's just blind assumption in an ideal, an absolute ideal.
Yeah, but Jarrah, you see, what you're doing, the kind of logic you're using here is if you bought a minivan from a car dealer and then you wrecked it and you brought it back to him and say, why did you sell me a wrecked minivan? Well, you wrecked it after you bought it.
No. We're born into sin in the Bible. You are a sinner the moment you start.
We are today.
You've already sinned upon being born. That's in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a catch-22. You start off in debt.
Mm-hmm.
You start off in spiritual debt in this life. It's not a blank slate. It's not a fair game. That's not justice. We start off paying for the sins of other people. We just got here. That's an ethic I have an issue with.
Yeah, exactly, because you're judging it by your own personal beliefs, and you put yourself above God in that aspect.
Yeah,
see,
I have put myself against the definition of God I've taught. Because if there's a real
I appreciate
God
your admission.
Who actually made the earth, okay, He's not represented in these fallacious absolutes that are difficult to work out. I mean, the morality
See, but you can't, hold on, Jarrah, you can't call them fallacious unless you give an explanation for how you can have abstract entities like the laws of logic in your worldview, which you said you can't do.
No. I don't have to explain how there can be gods to point out the logic in the book is fallacious. Why do I have to show that there are gods?
No, I didn't say, hold on, I did not say that. I did not say that.
Oh,
I said,
how can you question how these are fallacious
if you cannot explain?
I don't even have a worldview that allows for gods because I don't.
Jarrah, that is not what I said. Jarrah, that is not what I said. I said, if you can't explain how you can have universal, abstract, invariant entities such as the laws of logic in your worldview, then you can't call something fallacious.
Okay.
Yeah. Hello? Hello? I cannot hear you.
Can you
get, there you go. Okay, we're there. Can you put your mouth real close to the mic there?
Is that better?
That is better.
Okay. Let me see something.
Closer to the mic there.
Hold on.
Having a couple of technical difficulties, folks. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that.
So the point, to reiterate what I just said.
No, you can have, there is a social dynamic that I spoke on earlier. I spoke about the social dynamic. Logic and these ideas are applied to and can exist in the social dynamic. The knowledge base of humanity is part of our social dynamic.
And the social dynamic is whatever the majority says.
Jarrett,
the social dynamic is whatever the majority decides is the standard.
No, it's not whatever the majority decides. That's a very simplistic capitalistic way of looking at it.
You said it's a social convention.
What happens? All, everyone. It's not just a majority. Minority is affected. For example, the majority in America is the poor, but the ones who have a great deal of hold on fiscal policy are corporations and the 1%. They're a minority. They're a small group. Our government was decided. Some people suggest it's a representative democracy. Small groups can have serious effects on a large dynamic. You're the one who keeps saying it's all majority, but that's a very it's a very simplistic view of understanding the social dynamic.
So
it's
how,
not just majority, but there's a lot more that goes on.
But you're still saying that they're social conventions, so how can they be laws? If they can change by minority...
That's another fundamental question. How can there be laws outside of social conventions? There aren't. I don't believe there are laws outside of social conventions.
Okay, so if they're just social conventions, then whatever convention... We could just say, whatever convention I happen to want right now that contradicts Jera can be correct, and Jera has no reason to argue against me.
The social dynamic does, though. The social dynamic defines
the majority opinion.
Okay, look,
the majority opinion. That's what you're arguing.
You say, I think it's okay to rape women, and you go around raping women. A lot of people are going to come against you and say no. Even some small people. One person.
That's not what we're arguing, Jarrett.
Say you rape my girlfriend.
I'm not disagreeing with that. What you're saying right now. That's not what we're arguing. We're simply
saying
what you have
that
made it.
Where the laws are formed and generally hold power.
From,
not outside of it.
From majority opinion. That's exactly what you're. Your entire logic.
That's my opinion, but
your logic is coming down.
There's evidence that there's something impressing on the outside, and the model doesn't actually explain or predict human behavior as well as it does now. Then yes, but currently our model.
So you'll change it.
Good at predicting these.
So when your model changes, you'll change. Is that correct?
No. As the evidence changes, and my access to them and interpretation of them.
Your interpretation, thank you.
Changes.
So based on your interpretation of what you think is valid or not valid, that's where you're getting your morality from, which means it's completely subjective, and there are no standards. It's not wrong for Marquis de Sade.
No, there are no standards, but there are some standards that seem to be universal in the human dynamic. I don't know how to make this clear, that just because there are no universal standards doesn't
so you
mean
still,
because the way the universe is, certain patterns keep popping up.
So you can't say that rape is fallacious in any sense. There's no reason for you to. You may not believe that. You may not agree with me, and you're welcome to that, but there's no reason for it. That's my
point. No, if you're saying is there an absolute law against rape, no, there doesn't seem to be. But asking me to hold that position and defend it, I'm not going to do that.
Exactly,
like
because
position,
it's not possible.
Even though it may be logically true, we as a society choose to eschew that there's no law against rape and say we don't like it.
And you're appealing to society, you're appealing to majority, it's all logically fallacious.
No,
there's
it's
no
not.
Answers.
It's the social dynamic, dude. It's not, it's the pressures we live in, okay? If you turn
exactly.
up water pressure in something, eventually it's going to burst when the pressure overcomes.
If the majority, if there's,
the container,
if
okay?
the, hold on, Jarrett, if you lived in a community.
To the majority of the pressure of molecules
Jarrett,
in the container.
We don't.
You can't say when I talk about the majority and I'm speaking statistically, I'm appealing to the majority.
Jarrett, I'm going
to
try to.
A logical statement.
Jarrett, I'm going to try to explain this to you before, because we only got a few minutes left and we'll have to cut this off. I don't want to make it too long. I'm going to try to explain this. If we have a town, let's say we got a community that you live in, okay? Let's say there's, 100 people in this community, and then one person rapes someone else's wife, and 99, because you're one of the people, the other 99 think, that's acceptable. Is it okay?
Okay.
Don't you have to go along with their social dynamic?
What's that?
Isn't that a social dynamic? Don't you have to go along with it?
Yes, but my ethnocentrism Eurocentricism is too strong to accept that, but if I was raised in that culture, I would probably believe it was okay. I just wasn't, luckily.
So,
I was
but you
raised
see,
in a more civilized culture, but yes, you are correct. That's ethnocentricism, and if I was raised in that culture, I would probably have no... I wouldn't understand rape as a crime.
And that's why I'm saying is that there are when there's no standards of morality... then anyone who does not ascribe to the God of the Bible can't claim to be moral because there is no moral standard. See,
that's
a Christian,
a huge jump.
The 99,
no.
if I,
no,
yes,
no,
that's not a huge jump at all. When the 99, if I was living in the community, let's say you weren't there, I was living in the community, and the 99 said it was okay, I would stand up and say, no, this man needs to be punished. Not because I say so, not because, it doesn't matter what community I was raised in. I would say, not because I say so. Because the God of heaven says so, and he has
so
to deem these laws.
That. You weren't raised in a community where that's
Oh, I've got a Bible, though.
It doesn't. No, you don't. You aren't raised in a culture that has the Bible, so you don't get
Oh,
that.
I didn't say it was a culture that didn't have a
Bible.
You didn't
get the blank slate like everyone else.
I didn't say it didn't
have... So if you got the Bible,
Jarrah,
then you may have changed...
My presupposition...
You could have also been changed by another philosophy, too. It's happened.
Jarrah, I have the Christian presupposition, so the Bible is my Christian presupposition. Well, you can claim it's illogical, but you don't have a set standard of laws of logic, the immutable and you know invariant universal abstract entities. You don't have an explanation for that, so you can't call anything fallacious.
I do, but the moment we try to move into explanations about that, you get bogged down in simplistic binary arguments when the world isn't so binary. I can argue the binary, but from that logic, everything will break down very simplistically, and you're not going to get to the level you want. You're looking for an elegant, absolute answer.
No, I'm not. I'm looking for an elegant answer. Wait. An elegant answer?
Wait.
I'm just looking for an explanation. If somebody want to come along and say, you know, say, I believe in leprechauns, I'll say, okay, for what, you know, what's your explanation for that? You know, and if they do what they, you know, I mean, you have to give some explanation for it. You can't just say, well, it's there. Because that's exactly what you...
ignore it with the Christian supposition.
No. What you're doing, you're claiming that knowledge is there because it's there. That's all you have claimed so far.
No, it's there because we learn it and we share it.
Okay, Jarrah. Well, I'll tell you what. I will let the viewers...
Knowledge is there because we learn it and share it.
Jarrah, I'm going to let the viewers decide whether or not you said that. I'll let them take that. And I want to cut this off because I've had videos that have gone on too long and it just gets way too... Yeah, and I really appreciate your cordial nature to me. I mean, you've been wonderfully...
Apologize for interrupting you, though.
Oh, that's all right. And maybe we can have you back on again and we'll talk about another issue sometime.
We'll do it again.
All right, well...
It was a good talk, and I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on your show.
Thanks a lot. We'll see you later, okay?
Take care.
All right, bye-bye. All right, guys, that's it for the show today. Again, my name is Chris Johnson, founder of Creation Liberty Evangelism. Our website's www.creationliberty.com. I'd ask any Christians that are out there, if you were watching this show or catching up on YouTube, to keep praying for Jarrah. I think he's going to see exactly what I'm talking about eventually. I don't know. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. It depends on whether he wants to acknowledge God's authority over his life or not. That's completely up to him. I can't, and that's going to have to be his choice, and it's going to have to be whether or not God decides to do that. Because, you know, continue on in Romans, it says, For this cause God gave them up to vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature, and it goes on to talk about that. And in verse 28, it says, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. And I would hate it if God gave up on any of you, okay? I don't want that for you at all. And I ask that all people, you need to pray and that God would give you an acknowledgement and repentance. That's what you need. Because the beginning of all wisdom is fear of the Lord, okay? So keep praying for Jarrah, for all you Christians out there. And I hope you guys will keep studying your Bibles, keep studying the truth of the issue. And hopefully you'll subscribe to us if you get a chance, and we'll see you next time. Thanks a lot.